We are back in Parshat Chayisara. There was, I take full responsibility. It was definitely due to the fact that I was still working stuff out of my head. There was a request to just clarify the key points from last time before entering into the new material this time. So we're going to do that briefly, swiftly, and hopefully more clearly. Chayisara is divided into four clear and distinct parts. If you look at the Parshiyot, Ketuvot, and Stumot, and the breakdown of the Parsha, also content-wise, it actually really falls very nicely into those Parshiyot, Ketuvot, and Stumot. The first one is Chayisara, or what we more clearly define as, by taking a closer look at the Pesukim, as the purchase of Ma'arat HaMachpelah. That whole first section is the death of Sarah, the purchase of Ma'arat HaMachpelah, and her burial. The second piece of the Parsha is finding a Shidduch for Yitzchak, the search for Rivka, and eventually finding Rivka and bringing Rivka to Yitzchak. The third section, and the third and fourth being related to each other, is the conclusion of the life of Avraham, him finding a wife in Keturah, having more children, sending them east, and then being buried by Yitzchak and Ishmael, and then the death of Ishmael and the main progeny of Ishmael, not the same thing, of Ishmael. Okay? Those are the four distinct pieces of the Parsha. We have our general questions, which we always have, which is, how do these four things link together? What does the death of Sarah have to do with looking for a Shidduch for Yitzchak? Have to do with the death of Avraham and the death of Ishmael? Also, how does that fit under the rubric of Chayisara? Sarah's participation in this Parsha at first glance seems to be minimal, basically the first Pasuk. So why would it be called Chayisara? Also, in that Pasuk, she's not even alive at that point. It's after she's already dead. So all of these things are questions in terms of the overall structure of the Parsha. What we proposed last time was we talked about a keyword, Kinyan. And we said that Kinyan is one of the things that's going to draw this Parsha together. How so? That we focus on in the first piece... We focus on, in the first piece, the death of Sarah, but it's not really, again, the death of Sarah. Really, that whole first Parshia paragraph, that whole first Parshia in Chayisara, is dealing with the purchase of Ma'arat HaMachpelah, which is the first kinyan, the first acquisition, on a de'oraita level. It's the first time we see an acquisition. And our question then was, where else do we see kind of paradigmatic kinyanim? So the first time it appears in the Torah is by Ma'arat HaMachpelah, let's call it Torah Shebichtav, is by Ma'arat HaMachpelah. And the first and the paradigmatic place that we find it in Torah Sheba'al Peh is in Masechet Kiddushin. Kiddushin, which definitionally is the beginning of the marriage process between a man and a woman. And we showed how that Masechet really is the paradigmatic Masechet in Torah Sheba'al Peh of Kinyanim, of acquisitions. We found that it was very interesting that in that paradigmatic Masechet of Kinyanim, the place where we learn that there needs to be a Kinyan Kiddushin is actually from Ma'arat HaMachpelah, Kicha, Kicha, Mistei Ephron. The Limud there actually links the two back together and says, how do we know there's a Kinyan by Anisha? Because that's the same word or phrasing that it has by the acquisition of Ma'arat HaMachpelah. Therefore, linking the two primary Kinyanim of Ma'arat HaMachpelah and Kiddushin, and what it does for us on a story level in terms of Chayisara, it means that there's a linkage here between the parts 1 and parts 2 of our Parsha with Kinyan. The purchase of Ma'arat HaMachpelah, which is our major Kinyan on a Doraisa level, in a Torah Shebichtav level, and then what's the next story? Finding a wife for Yitzchak, who he's going to be Mekadesh. Already clearly linking these two under the rubric, under the category of Kinyan. What I suggested based on that, taking what I learned from my Rebbe one step further, my Rebbe proposes, which I think is very beautiful, that the idea then of a Kinyan is giving of oneself into something else. That's the only way that I can really, really make that thing a Kinyan. That's the only way it really belongs to me. Quoting the Pasuk, the fairly well-known Pasuk of Sone Matanot, that a person who hates gifts will truly live. That there is something antithetical Jewishly about receiving a gift. Because what's ours is something that we put into, something that we purchase, something that we acquire. When I put of myself into that, then it's truly mine. If I don't put of myself into it, it's not mine. It's not mine unless I put into it. That's what makes it connected to me. That's what unifies me and that thing. I propose taking it one step further. That's great, but there's lots of things that we purchase. What make these two paradigmatic? What make Ma'arat HaMachpelah and Kiddushin the two prime Kinyanim? And what I wanted to suggest was is that the only real kinyanim that we can make in this world, the only real acquisitions that we can make in this world that stand with us forever, are the relationships that we have, and particularly the core relationships that we have. The two core relationships that we have are with
God
and
our spouse.
Those, automatically to us in our minds, are the two primary relationships. And since we know from a Jewish perspective that the essence of a relationship is giving to the other, so to make a kinyan on that person, meaning making that person truly relating to me and me and that other person, that other being, truly connected, is to give of myself to the other. And so we make a kinyan on Olam Haba, which definitionally is connecting to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and receiving him as goodness in the world to come. Ma'arat Machpelah, purchase of a burial place, purchase of a world to come, and an emphasis on it doesn't end here. There's something really, really important about what comes next. Ma'arat Machpelah, it's kaful. It's specifically something which has two levels, indicating Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. That's the kinyan that's indicating the importance of being kona, your chilek in Olam Haba. And then the kinyan of Kiddushin is making sure that you're kona, the person who you're spending the rest of your life with. And we suggested also that even the phraseology of the Gezerah Shavah here indicates that it needs to be a bi-directional relationship, because even though it's the man who's mekadesh the woman, the phraseology of the pasuk in our parsha, which we learn out the need for kinyan isha, was, what's the exact pasuk? Kach mimeni. What's the words before that? Natati kesef hazdek kach mimeni. He's saying to Ephraim, please take it from me. Meaning, there needs to be a recipient, that recipient needs to want to receive. So he suggested that was also key to the process as well. Ad kam, we did last time. Questions on what we did last time before we move forward? So Keith, there are. Go for it. Yes.
I think you mentioned why not, this is not possible, but why can't there be a relationship between a parent and their child? I feel like that's more like they're also giving up everything.
Excellent.
No, you're not giving up, but they're giving over everything.
Had I planted you, I could not have asked for better transition to part two. Okay? Excellent. Because what we've done here is we've said, I'm going to take it forward now, we're going to spend the rest of your answering your question. Okay? What we've done here in setting this up is saying there's a clear connection between the purchase of Ma'arat HaMachpelah and the Kinyan Kiddushin that's happening between Yitzchak and Rivka. But what's also happening here, which I think you're already drawing out, is something's happening here between Yitzchak and the loss of his mother, which then, on a text level, produces the next phase, which is Yitzchak needing to find a wife. Yitzchak loses his mother, Sarah, and therefore Yitzchak needs to find his wife, Rivka. That's something which is supported by Chazal and brought by Rashi in a way that would have made Freud proud. Check it out here. Let's take a look inside. The last pasuk and Rashi on that pasuk. Breshit Chaf Dalet. Pasuk Samech Zayin. When Yitzchak meets Rivka. Vayivieha Yitzchak Oela Sarah. Yitzchak meets Rivka. Yitzchak's immediate response is to bring Rivka into the tent of his mother. V'yikach Rivka v'tilo l'isha. There they became husband and wife. V'ya'aveh, and he loved her. V'yinachem Yitzchak acharimo. Then he was consoled about the death of his mother. Right? We would actually send somebody to therapy for something like that now. We'd be worried about that. Clearly, no, there's something very serious that's happening. The Torah is telling us that there's an actual process here that's real and relevant in general, but also something which we need to understand. Why is this something which only exists by Yitzchak and Rivka? We don't see in any other case by Abraham, where it would have been less relevant anyway, but not by Yaakov, of the need to bring his wife, in the case of Yaakov, wives, into the tent of his mother in order to be consoled for her death. Nor do we see the immediate need to find a shidduch after the death, meaning it's in fact Rivka who sends Yaakov to find a wife while she's still alive. So this concept of the death of his mother and the need to find a wife to in some way replace his mother, to find consolement over the death of his mother, links these two together, and is something that also is unique by Yitzchak. We have to understand what makes it unique by Yitzchak. That it manifests in the Yitzchak story. Just to show how deep it goes, so again, Rashi quotes the Chazal, if you have the Rashi, great, if not, you can see it's on Pasuk Samech Zayin. Ha'ohela Sarah Imo, Rashi says, Va'ivyeha ha'ohela, v'na'asit dugmat Sarah Imo. She was like the image of Sarah to him, his mother to him. Kilomar varehi Sarah imo. She was like Sarah, his mother. Shekol zman she Sarah kayemet. As long as Sarah was alive, there were three miracles that were always going on in that tent, in the tent of Sarah. One, haya ner daluk, me'erev Shabbat l'erev Shabbat. There was a continuous light that went from one Shabbos to another. Uvracha mitzuya be'isa. And there was continuous bracha by the production of bread within the ohel. Va'anan kashur al ha'ohel. And there was a cloud that always rested on the tent. Shemeta pasku. When she died, they went away. Ukishebar Rivka chazru. When Rivka came, then they all came back. Kach katuv chazal, and Rashi brings it on the spot. Right. Also interesting that those are what end up being in the Mishnah the three with certain understandings of what those are. The three base primary mitzvot that are specifically kashur to a woman. Right. But we see the Mishnah in Shabbat of Nida Chalan Hablakat Haner. Also note that there's a clear parallel there, and that needs to be understood in and of itself. But, that being beside the point, the Psukim, Rashi, Chazal, everybody's picking up on the fact that Sarah was gone, Rivka needed a wife to replace Sarah, his mother, and only them was consoled. It's a Pasuk, it's a Rashi, everything's kind of there. Now, this is also not the first time we see this type of concept even exist within Chumash. And so I said tongue-in-cheek about Yitzchak. Chas v'shalom, it's not that he needed therapy. There were so issues with Yitzchak. It was tongue-in-cheek just to bring up the point that something is happening here. But this is actually something fundamental in Torah itself. Where is the first shidduch that's ever made in Chumash? Not a true question.
Here.
Where?
This one.
Adam and Chava. Going way back. God makes the first shidduch in history. Right? Literally creates it. But God makes the first shidduch in history between Adam and Chava. And it's very interesting, in the Parsha, at the end, in that section of Parshat Bereishit, where Adam and Chava are created, if you want to take a look in your text, open up to Bereishit, Perek Bet, Pasuk, Chav Gimel. He puts Adam to sleep. Adam searches the whole animal kingdom for a mate, is unable to find a mate, so God puts him to sleep to create a new creation that would actually be a suitable mate for him. Vayomer ha'adam, again, Perek Bet Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vayomer ha'adam, zot hapam, this time, after searching all of the animal kingdom and not finding a mate, this time that I now have somebody that came for me, zot hapam, etzem me'atzamayu, basari b'sari, it's part of myself, it's from my bones, it's from my flesh. Lezoti kare isha, this will be called woman, ki me'ish lukacha zot, because she was taken from man, and now we can reunite and become one. Then the Torah does something very odd. Instead of dealing with the local story of Adam and Chava, the Torah zooms out and gives us a global, broad perspective. The Torah says as follows, Al Kain, therefore, our third person narrator says, therefore, Ya Al Kain Ya'azov Ish, Et Aviv Ve'et Imo, V'Dabak V'Ishto V'Yilu Basar Echad, therefore, every person needs to detach from their mother and father. Here it's talking specifically to the man, but it's for both sides. Every man must attach to his mother and father, become attached to his wife, and be one flesh. But that's very specific. It's not, therefore, every person must find a mate. Every man must find a woman. Every wife must find a husband. That's not what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk goes out and they say, therefore, every person in their life needs to, stage one, detach from their mother and father, and then find a mate. Then find their husband or wife. So the basis for detaching from one's parents, like we see here, literally in the death of Sarah, and somehow find the next logical stage in the finding of a shidduch, in the finding of one's spouse, is already set up in Bereishit. While that may be the case, our primary question still stands. Why specifically by Yitzchak? What is this teaching us about Yitzchak? Why does this come out through Yitzchak and through his story? Is everybody clear on the background and the question? Any questions?
Yeah, can you just repeat the thing about detaching from your parents? And then what does that have to do with, like, with this?
It's meaning that pasuk is describing basically what's happening right here. Al kein yazov ish et aviv ve'et imo. A person needs to first detach from their parents. In this case, he literally loses his mother. His mother dies. Mm-hmm. Then he goes, v'davak b'ishto v'ilav asar achad. Then he comes and finds a wife. But there's a process of removing from one's parents and then coming to one's spouse.
So what was the question?
But the question that remains is, we see this saying about all people, why is this the only story where we see that happen so explicitly? Where one needs, the looking for Shidduch necessitates first the death of Sarah, and Yitzchak is only consoled over the death of Sarah once he finds Rivka and brings her back into the tent, and then he's consoled for the death of his mother. That extreme presentation is only by Yitzchak and Rivka. Good?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody here?
Hello? We're
here. Okay.
Good.
Okay.
I have, like, a side question, sort of. Mm-hmm. So, like, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, like, they each represented something. Mm-hmm. Like, Avram was chesed, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. So what was Yitzchak's?
Gvura. Or Yira, and as you continue to predict where we're going, we'll come back to that as well. So.
Sorry.
No, it's great. It's great. It means we're all thinking about the same thing. Let's see there. My Rebbe, Rav Amos, has a beautiful piece here where he kind of tangents off onto the connection between Tu B'Av, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur. It's a very, very complicated, beautiful piece that might be a great Shabbat Shuvah Drasha one day. But I'm going to try to sidestep it so we can stay focused and local, because there's already a lot of pieces on the board. And I've heard it multiple times to try to fully process it. Okay, so we're going to try to keep it local, but I'm pulling out some material here to try to streamline it. Okay? Let's think about these two paradigmatic relationships. I'm sorry, I keep using that word. It's one of my favorite words, but I should find other words and synonyms and stuff to pretend that I don't use it all the time. So we have these two kind of key... Now there's just hands. Relationships, right?
Two hands.
Two hands that are showing big things that are important that might be paradigms. There are these two primary relationships in a person's life. What are the primary relationships that are being brought out here? You were already hinting to this. Also not a trick question. Which is not like deep Kabbalistic philosophy.
Wait, why is this question different than what you asked in the beginning?
What are the true primary relationships?
God.
What? That exists within one's life, not... yes, God is always there.
Okay.
In the scope, in the kind of longitudinal scope of one's life.
Parent and child.
Parent and child, on a more down-to-earth level. Right? You have the concept of... parent. There's a parent and a child. Sorry, parent and child is one. That's a relationship. Those are not two relationships.
Okay, and the other is spouse. No?
Excellent. There we go.
Wait, this is relationships of what?
These are the two primary relationships here that we've been talking about.
Right.
Right? You've got parent and you've got spouse. Alkenia zo ish et aviv ve'et imo v'davak v'ishtovi l'basar chav. Death of Sarah Marata Machpelah, search for a spouse for Yitzchak. But these are the two primary relationships that every person goes through.
Maybe you should say fundamental relationships.
Mm. Fundamental.
That's another word.
Great. These are the two fundamental relationships. Okay. I accept. Okay? Now, if we were to make... I would say there's one basic and most primary distinction between the two. Most foundational or fundamental distinction between the two. There are many distinctions, obviously, between the two, hopefully. Some more fundamental ones. What would be the kind of thinking about the nature of a parent to a child versus one spouse to another spouse? How might we categorize the difference between the two, Basheva?
With the, like, parent-child, like, a lot of the time the parent is given to the child and the child isn't really giving so much to the parent, but to the spouse it's supposed to be like you're giving and taking, but it can't be one-sided kind of thing.
Okay, this is one-directional. And this is bi-directional. Anybody want to say anything graduated from that? Yeah.
Well, a parent-child is a natural relationship. It's not something it has to be worked for. The parent loves his child even before he gives birth to his child, whereas his spouse, just like more work is required.
Natural work. Yeah.
A spouse shouldn't have power over another spouse, but in a parent-child relationship, until a point, a parent should have power or like
control.
Authority over the child.
Okay. And
quality
responsibility.
go with that. Yeah.
I think the caring level is different. Maybe it's the same thing as the giving, but I don't know, like the love between parent and child is different than spouse and spouse.
So another phrase that we could put on here is that this relationship in being one directional or natural is also dependent. There's an automatic, natural, one directional giving relationship here. Here, this is a more free will relationship. On a most fundamental level, I don't choose my parent, I do choose my spouse. Which fits almost everything here. Emily, you definitely have good points here. I think that they're the outlier at the moment. We're going to focus on the top three, but definitely true to a certain extent. What's happening with a parent is that it's a more top-down relationship. The chesed that's coming down in that situation is an unconditional love, is something which is being bestowed onto the child. The child is always receiving it. There comes a point in a person's life where they need to detach. Alkeni azov ish et aviv et imo. That's something which needs to happen. Where a person, the Chumash is telling us, in Bereshit, in the most basic genesis, right? The most basic genetic parsha that there is, that tells about the creation of man and woman, where they need to, there's a point where every person needs to detach from their parents. They need to detach from this one directional relationship that is predetermined, and not just receive the chesed of the parent, but they then need to go into a free will relationship that's bi-directional and where the love is not necessarily unconditional. Here, one can never stop being the child of a parent. A parent can turn a child away. They can, theoretically, in a horrible situation, abandon a child. They could not be connected to a child. But you can never break the genetic bond between a parent and a child. And normally, the bestowal of chesed from the parent to the child is there. By a spousal relationship, by a marriage, it's a free will relationship that each one opts into. There needs to be giving from both sides to the other. And should the marriage not function properly, the marriage can end. It's a free will relationship. But what it also is doing is moving from a paradigm of, if we were to use two key terms, which you already hinted to, as it was anyway, if we go back to our paradigms of even who and what Yitzchak is, we're moving from chesed to din. From chesed to yirah. From a relationship, chesed means I'm just giving and giving and giving and giving and giving and it doesn't matter. I'm giving outward from myself to the other. There's a relationship of din here of, if I do what I'm supposed to do, we're good. If not, there are things that I'm not allowed to do. There are things that I can't do. There are things that if I do wrong, that relationship may stop, or maybe may have problems, or may break, or may need a break. A marriage is a relationship which is complex on a very different way in that it has a din element to it. A spouse relationship has a din element to it. A parent relationship is always kulo chesed in its most basic form.
I don't get how it's din.
Din means that there are certain parameters to that relationship. When you enter into a relationship with when a parent gives birth to a child, they get a birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
You get a birth certificate. You have to get a birth certificate. You don't have a choice. There is a birth certificate. When a husband and a wife get married, there's a ketubah. What does the ketubah say? It first says, I promise to love you forever and ever. That's also really important to note. It also says, Havililintu. Right? But the rest of that document is, here are the basic requirements that are prerequisite for the marriage, that if they are not met, the requirements of this marriage are not being met, and this marriage can be terminated. But a ketubah is a legal document. There are parameters to a marriage, of what can happen and what can't happen, of when the relationship is functioning and when it's not functioning. You can have a dysfunctional parent-child relationship, but you can never break the genetic bond. Here there are rules. There's a basis, there's a premise. Hopefully you don't have to go there. That's why some people are proponents of putting the ketubah up on the wall in the house, because the focus is on Havililintu. I want to remind myself that I always want to make sure to give to my wife. That's a beautiful thing. But there is another half of the document, which is also to say, there are certain things which there are certain lines which cannot be crossed. There are certain things which are required to be given, that are required to be done, that both parties are required to do for each other, that are the basis of that marriage, which are kiddin. You don't need a shtar unless there's din involved. Okay? So what's happening is we're leaving that chesed relationship to that din relationship. Who is going to be the person who is going to bring out more than anything else the necessity of a din relationship? Who?
Yitzchak.
Yitzchak, who we described before without putting the whole chart back up on the board. Abraham is bringing in chesed. He's being metakin chesed in the world in our paradigm of the midot. And Yitzchak is bringing in gvura or din. And so he's embodying this transition of the leaving behind of the parental relationship of chesed and only being able to move forward when he enters into the spousal relationship of din. That's what creates a conclusion to the chesed-oriented phase and fully brings out Yitzchak and consoles him in the way he needs to be consoled.
Is that like a problem, like that Yitzchak had that personality that he needed, like too much? Is there like negative din? Like
there is negative din, and we're going to get to it when we meet Esav. That's next week's part. That's the next part we're going to do. However, here's another instance where I would like to take things one step further than my Rebbe proposed in Shir, and I want to suggest the following. B'derech Hafshar, I want to suggest the following, based on your point as well. Okay, and then I'll come back to you, Lior.
I just wanted to know if you could quickly leave us on the list
because
there's
a glare.
Here.
Okay. I want to suggest the following, and that is that I think that there is a final transition, and I'm still working this through. I'm struggling more with this parsha than any previous parsha. I don't know why. Usually, it's just easy to just kind of process and a little bit repackaging over my Rebbe's kind of shita here. But I just struggled a lot with Chayisara. I felt there was a lot more there that wasn't being tapped. I think that what's also happening here is the fulfillment which Marissa, you put up on the board last time, this kind of ending of chesed that really does travel throughout the Parsha. Meaning, what happens at the end of Parshat Vayira? We talked about how that was the emergence of Yirah, the emergence of Din. Akedat Yitzchak brings Yitzchak to the fore. And the emergence of Yitzchak who embraces Yirah, who is metakin Din in the world. Metakin Yirah in the world. Metakin Gvura in the world. We have Yitzchak who does that. But we also talked about in Parshat Vayira that even the way that Akedat Yitzchak is presented, it's presented as whose test? Abraham's test. And we talked about why that is and how it was a test. It was the whole parsha was pushing Abraham to be able to produce Yitzchak and recognize that chesed needed to exist within a system. It needed to be tempered by Yirah. It needed to be tempered by Gvura. We talked about all in terms of the end of Parshat Vayira. What I think that's happening here is that Sara Imenu is giving that kulo chesed, is giving that chesed to her son Yitzchak. I think here's Yitzchak's need to go out and make sure that he also finds his balance and not be himself too much of an extreme of Gvura or Yira and remain tempered. Just like Avraham learned how to be tempered by binding himself to Yitzchak at Akedas Yitzchak, Atayadati ki yirei Elokimata, it said about Avraham. What's happening, I think, here is, meaning what we've been left out of this conversation is this concept of chesed and the fact that chesed is going to tie together the whole parsha also. We'll do that in one second. But what is really the search for Rivka? Think about what is Eliezer doing the whole time? What is he looking for? Also not a true question. What is he looking for? Simply. You could say pshat level or expound.
Someone who would give water to him and
who would give water to him. But not only that, go even further and give water to his camels. Give water to everybody. And give water, which is also, by the way, mayim is compared to chesed in the Torah. Right? Give and give mayim. Give water and give to everything. Go above and beyond. Be a sort of
balance.
Further of chesed. So what do you say? What do you say, Tzivi?
Balance out Yitzchak.
I think that this is Yitzchak recognizing that when he loses Sarah, who's also a balat chesed, when he loses Sarah, who's also definitionally a chesed relationship because she's a parent, when he loses Sarah, the tempering of Yitzchak comes from finding a din relationship where the two parties both agree to enter into that bond. It's Yitzchak, so it's in the context of a din relationship. But both parties choose to enter into that bond where they perfectly balance each other out. Rivka needs to be kulo chesed because Yitzchak is kulo din, is kulo gvura. And that marriage allows there to be a continuation and a sustaining of chesed within Klal Yisrael, even when the phase of chesed in Klal Yisrael ends. Rivka carries that torch. Rivka bears that torch. How do I know that Rivka's literally bearing that torch? We did it at the beginning of Shira.
Yaakov and Esau. Here's when she walked into.
And what happened? Not only did he feel better at a pshat level, what did Chazal say? The three things that were definitionally Sarah-esque, Sarah-oriented, come back. The maintaining of Sarah, the maintaining of Abraham and Sarah, the maintaining of the chesed-oriented peace within the home is brought back by Rivka. And then there's a definitive continuation and continuity that happens within Klal Yisrael, in the slow production of Klal Yisrael, which then can then eventually produce Yaakov, the balance of the two, that can produce Yaakov, is going to come from the unification of that pure chesed of Rivka that's maintaining the chesed of Avraham and Sarah, binding itself to Yitzchak in a marriage and in a free will choice, not a kedas Yitzchak, but in a free will choice of marriage, of a spousal relationship. Once that's cemented, once this is definitely here, once we know that we're safe, then and only then can we 110% end the phase of chesed in Klal Yisrael. And so we see the death of Abraham, who embodies all of the good aspects of chesed, and then we see the death of Yishmael, who embodies all of the extremes and negatives of chesed. That's how we can then conclude that phase of history. That's how we then can close out the parsha of Chayei Sarah. Chayei Sarah then perhaps indicating that Sarah continues to live on in Klal Yisrael through being the embodiment of chesed that travels through the Jewish home and what the Jewish woman brings to the Jewish home. Perhaps. It gets tricky because men are generally chesed, women are generally poor or din. Conversation for another time. But in terms of Chayei Sarah, that idea of Sarah needing to live on, both in Olam Haba by Me'arat Machpelah, and then living on through Rivka and bringing what Sarah brings to Klal Yisrael through into the eventual production of Yaakov, that is perhaps, Derech HaEfshar, that's perhaps why Chayei Sarah is even the name of the Parsha. To the point we can then see the conclusion of this phase and we can start to move into the next phase of history in Parshat Toldot. Final questions, thoughts, or comments? Yes, Adina.
So I understand that like this thing is throughout Avraham's name is Chesed. But you were saying how like in a parent-child relationship, like you see there's a Chesed there, and then in a spousal relationship there's Din. So even though Yitzchak is like Gevura and Avraham's like Chesed, but like every other relationship is Entanah, like every parent-child relationship is still Chesed, and every like spouse relationship is still Din. Mm-hmm. So why isn't it portrayed clearly in all the other like?
Because this was something which Yitzchak needed to bring out. He's bringing out the din orientation and the necessity of that din-oriented relationship because he is din, he is gvura. So that story, this shidduch story of Chumash is going to have to be Yitzchak. And he's the one who's going to need to be tempered by chesed, which is why we're so desperately searching out for Rivka. I think it's those two coming together. We're going to stop now because we're late to start Rambam. We'll start Rambam and we will pick up with Toldot next week.